You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Welcome to Digging Up Ancient Aliens. This is the podcast where we examine alternative history and ancient alien narratives in popular media. Do these ideas hold water to an archaeologist, or are there better explanations out there? We are now on episode 79, and I am Frederick, your guide into the world of pseudo-archaeology, and this time it will be a competition. I will compete against Mark, who hosts the channel ArchaeoSoup, and we will see who is the best expert on pseudo-archaeology dating to 2024. So what happened last year, more or less? It's hosted by Michelle Franklin from Lectures and Legends. Both of these have been guests on this podcast previously. So this will be a, interesting episode and see, who walks out a victory. And you can participate by just pausing after the questions and see if you get the correct answer. Let me know how many, right answers you got on this quiz. And I want to thank all of those of you who are supporting the show. You're really helping out producing this content, and I'm humbled and grateful for your support. And if you want to help out, I will tell you how to do that and get some bonus stuff at the end of the episode. Remember that you find, often sources, resources, and reading suggestions on the website, diggingupancientaliens.com, but there you won't find much sources, but some, hopefully. There you can also find the contact info if you have any questions or notice any mistakes in any of the episodes you are listening to. And if you like the podcast but don't want to donate any money, that's all right. But I would really appreciate if you left one of those fancy five-star reviews or thumbs up or whatever they use on the, podcast player you're listening to. Now that we have finished our preparations, let's dig into the episode. So I want to welcome two returning guests to the show. We have again Michelle and Mark from ArchaeoSoup. So what we will do today is watch a 2.5 hour Ancient Alien special on the British Isles.
We did that already. And I think Mark and I had to be professionally resuscitated after that.
Mark, you got this blank.
It's still one of the best episodes, I think, that you've ever done, because you can visibly see our brains melting out through our eyes.
Yeah. I had liquid on the back of my neck. I was like, what's that? And then I realized it was just, raw intelligence just leaving my body. I had to have a shower.
No, I won't surprise you with that. I will actually hand things over to Michelle for this special episode.
Wunderbar. So,
this is a year in archaeology. Frederick asked me to make a quiz based on all of the things that we've covered over the year in archaeology and history. And neither Mark nor Frederick have seen these questions. So they have asked me to make this so they can compete to see which one of them dies first.
What? I've only just learned it's a competition. Now death is on the line?
Well, if it's a competition, there better be some stakes. Otherwise, there's no point. Yeah. I don't even know if there's a reward for winning. I think the reward is not dying dumb. The reward is knowledge. That's about it. So, Mark, do you have your scoreboard ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark, so if you will keep tally, honestly, I don't think there's even a reason to keep tally, but Frederick desperately wants to win, which I think both of you are going to win anyway, because these are the topics that both of you have covered on your programs, each of you, throughout 2024. So once Mark is ready, we'll start off with the first question.
I mean the loser
I mean, just shows that they have not, you know, watched Ancient Aliens and other pseudo-programming as much.
That could be, you know, if you win, that could be a reward, not to watch Ancient Aliens for 1 week.
Wow.
Give your brain a break.
Yeah, you just emerge from the office and your partner's like, is it not happening? Are you okay? Is the internet down? Okay, cool. Yep. So good to go.
Question one. How did the Vikings actually bury their dead?
I'm going to say it depends when and where you're talking about.
Okay, good. Continue.
In some places, we're talking about cremation. In other places, we're talking about disarticulated burial and storage of bones, in fact. And in other cases, we are talking about complete burials. But I suppose it's a matter of definition. I mean, for example, there may be a local tradition near to you, Frederick, that I'm not aware of.
Yeah, we have the burial ships and the mounds and the stone ships also. Don't forget those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. And actually, those are beautiful, aren't they? The little ships laid out in almost like an ellipsis of...
If you walk in some fields, especially on Gotland, you have whole fields of these little boats just laying around scattered in the landscape.
Mm.
Is there no fire in these burials?
Ah, well, yeah, obviously...
obviously in the cremations you have to.
Obviously we all know that if you're really important, then you're put on a boat, pushed out to sea, and then set alight.
According to one saga.
Yes.
But they didn't actually put it on fire in that saga, they just pushed it out to sea.
Yeah. That's why Outlander is the superior Viking movie.
We can't say that it didn't happen, but there's no evidence of people having their ships set on fire and set out to sea. There's just no evidence for it whatsoever. Okay. See, I told you you would do fine with all of these because these are subjects that you've covered, even some of them recently. The question two, what is the archaeological evidence for the Loch Ness Monster?
Zero.
Oh, Mark has a different answer?
No, I'm just going to say... That would be paleontology.
Ooh. Would it though? Plessy's not a dinosaur.
No, is it? Are they not? I thought they were thought to be. I forgot which one it is now. Oh, well, it's not a dinosaur, is it? Because it's thought to be a prehistoric creature of the same age of dinosaurs, which is a paleontological thing, isn't it? That's not exclusively dinosaur.
Is it?
I don't know.
So, but why do people think that Nessie is real? Or why do people think that Nessie was a dinosaur? Is there a cultural memory of a dinosaur? It is absolutely impossible, by the way, because Loch Ness, even though it's one of the deepest lakes, it was covered over in ice until we were talking about the history of Earth until very recently.
Yeah.
So why do people think that Nessie is a dinosaur?
That's a good question, but it's from the surgeons. I think it's the surgeons' photos. But it has this long neck, like a swan. So, I mean, could be some sort of swan monster.
Nessie just goes off.
Yeah. And then along comes the UK monarch because they have unique rights to eat it. It is a swan.
That's right.
I say, that's mine. Yeah.
Do any of you know who made up most of the quote unquote evidence for Nessie?
No. Interestingly,
I don't have his name.
No.
I think he's a surgeon, though. But other than that, it's...
Yeah, it was one person in particular who essentially fabricated most of the quote-unquote evidence. Uh-huh. And even there was a great race to... This was really all... It was a publicity stunt. And that was it. And so ever since then, people have said, oh, I can see Nessie, or Nessie is there.
Yeah.
You know, people use it as a great way to get people to Loch Ness, which is fine. I mean, it's really no different than having King Arthur at Tintagel, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
But it was a publicity stunt, and people just use this as a way to now get people to visit the area. All right, so question three. Was Rapa Nui established by aliens?
Yes.
Of course. No. Atlanteans. I guess Atlanteans.
Velocity of Atlantis. Yeah. But why do people, what is the whole, Frederick did a whole program on this, but what is the whole difficulty that people have with the return of the Moai and Rapa Nui?
Well, it mostly boils down to this idea. I mean, the alien part is kind of new, but people look at structure on Rapa Nui and narratives from the local population, and some interpret it as a white set of people came there and brought culture with them, and Thor Heyerdahl, the Norwegian raft enthusiast, went there trying to find this lost civilization that he thought originated from South America, and before that in Europe, but they got kicked out by the brown population in South America, went to Rapa Nui, where they were killed off by the local population, or by population immigrating from Polynesia. But a lot of those ideas comes from there, and then people are somehow befuddled by how you can move stones.
Mm-hmm. Well, because there was a story. There's a story, isn't there? There's a tradition that the stones warp into place. And that may well be literally that they were guided. You can sort of rock. And there's been similar experiments done with some of the Sarsen stones, I believe, at Stonehenge as well. You can sort of meander them.
There's 3 archaeologists that actually tested walking on Moai. So they made almost full replica. We're talking 10 tons plus. And then they made the bottom a bit roundish. And then they took a couple of people. And then you could
just got shimmy it along.
And then you just wiggle it back and forth. And it kind of moved.
You still see those memes of like the statues having toes.
Yeah.
On the other end of the world, like the heads are here and the toes are here.
Yeah. Although was our Norwegian man, was he disgusted when he got to Rapa Nui and it wasn't Rafta Nui, and he was like, Oh man, I thought it was rafts, and then
no, because he spoke Norwegian, Mark.
Oh, get it. Okay, never mind.
The Flotte Nui.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I understand that. That's fine, yeah. So
this is a multilingual joke.
Yeah, maybe he misheard, you know, the floaty aspect, and I'm going to back off from that.
Right, here's a question just for you, Mark.
Okay.
Who made all the crystal skulls?
I know that they sort of turned up in the mid-20th century, seemingly made by modern people, basically out of using, you know, techniques that are in fact not appropriate. I don't know the full history of it. I do remember being very disappointed when they turned up in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
The movie we should not mention.
We don't
by
remember
name.
That movie, Mark. We don't remember.
No.
It didn't happen. But you've got to for the canon.
No.
That's the thing. You're just like, no.
I don't remember Indy in the fridge. I don't remember the aliens talking at the end. I don't remember.
No,
but the crystal skulls originate in, at least the most famous, the Michael Hedges skull, come from a crystal jeweler dealer from Germany.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, okay. Nice.
I forgot, but he bought it there. He bought it from an auction, and then he tried to tell this story a while later that he found it in, was it Belize or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then his daughter has embellished on the legends ever since.
And his daughter thought that the skulls actually they could tell the future and that they talked to her. And I just want to know how she divined that, how she thought that the skull, like, did she put her hand in and they went meow, 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 and they could actually talk? Or did she like shine the back of the skull and looked in it? I just want to know how they actually spoke to her and told her the things.
I think it's telepathically. And if you want to have this power yourself, you can actually buy a set of 12 crystal skulls on Etsy nowadays.
Oh,
so you can have a complete set with a little mat you can place
it
on.
I'm going straight there, straight to Etsy. See, this, I have a sickness, okay? I really do, because all I've got going around in my head is believes me, guys. It's the real thing. It's just like, for God's sake, Mom, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
It's great. We don't even have to say anything, Fred. We just watch Mark go in circles going, and then, oh, no.
Yeah. I'm a self-trolling pun maniac, yeah.
Yep.
Ugh, terrible.
As long as you know.
I've been told.
All right, next question, just for you, Frederick. The Kensington runestones, evidence of Vikings in the U.S.?
No, it's evidence of a Norwegian with too much time on his hand. No, sorry, a Swede. Yeah, a Swede. Norwegian companion, too.
But this one is not the only one. So what other great frauds are there in the U.S.? And why specifically?
Great frauds.
Were these runestones actually made?
Obviously, there's the 2020 election. Then we've got... No, that's not funny. That's not funny right now.
Well, when it comes to runestones, there's two of them. I think one is in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And who want to go there? So, I mean, obviously a fraud.
Mm.
But, I mean, a lot of this ties into Scandinavian identity of the immigrants in the early 1900s. So these rune hoaxes are, in reality, a more interesting history from a modern perspective.
Yeah.
But it's also part of this idea that Americans, the white part of the population, want to feel that this is their land, it's them first. So they kind of invent ways to kind of, oh, but Europeans were here a lot earlier, so we don't steal land from the native, we're just reclaiming it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as if the Vikings were there before the natives?
No, on the Kensington runestone, they're apparently killed by the natives. So, but I mean, it ties them deeper to the country than instead of a couple of hundreds of years. We're talking thousands of years of history there that they can relate to and claim heritage from. Mm. But there was a lot of identity movement in the early 1900s, late 1800s. Especially among the Scandinavian population that moved to Minnesota and these places, that they still had a strong Scandinavian identity. They still spoke their language. They didn't integrate properly. So they want to, you know, create their own celebration. They got jealous that they celebrate Columbus and not Eric the Red or anything like that instead, because, well, Columbus discovered America. Yeah, Leif Erikson. Mm. But Leif Erikson, according to the sagas, discovered it, you know, much earlier than Columbus. So there was this idea that we should celebrate Columbus. And that's maybe why the Kensington runestone was created, because it was found in close to the World Fair that was taking place where they celebrated Columbus. And they were a bit upset that the Norwegian and Scandinavian Swedish people didn't get their representation there. And according to the Norwegian that seems to have been participating in the hoax, at least according to his children, who talked with historians in the 70s, they said that they wanted to, you know, show off those stuffed academics.
Well, I can't really decide how I feel about it, because in that sense, I wonder if these hoaxes were designed to be taken seriously in a sort of a later sort of states-wide national story, or if it was just someone trying to set up folktales. I mean, you can ask similar questions of, for example, the origins of Mormonism, for example. What sort of impact was actually intended in those early stories of discoveries in the woods and being visited by an angel? Was it actually just to impress the people around in your immediate vicinity? Or actually was it a sort of as some places in the world today do, an attempt to use interpretations of archaeological evidence to legitimize full-on statehood, as opposed to just sort of feeling comfortable where you are? Do you know what I mean? I have a bit of sympathy for...
Well, in the case of Mormonism, I don't think there's any archaeological evidence that Jesus
the
U.S.
No wooden submarine has been found to date.
No. But in that sense, I can imagine a bored Swede just, you know, carving out a... And it takes a little bit of knowledge. I mean, like, he clearly knew some older forms of Swedish and Norse derived
not really the dialect. Runic alphabet that he used. We have several versions of it, so we have to remember runes were used in Sweden as late as 1911.
Yeah.
And the script he used has no earlier evidence than 1875.
Oh, so not even... So I always was always under the impression that, well, the runes were flawed, but the something about the grammar was pushing it back to medieval, at least, or not?
No, I mean, I have read a lot of rune stones, both medieval and Viking age, and when you approach this early Scandinavian language, it's very difficult, especially if you're not used to it.
Right.
You can't really go to a runestone, read it fluently, even if you know the individual letters or look them up. But this is like someone in the 1800s imagining how it would sound in the 1300s. And I mean, it's... a mixture of modern Swedish, Danish, and Norwegian languages that the creator obviously had access to.
Yeah.
His biggest flaw was obviously not including Icelandic or Faroese.
But also as well, it sounded in that case, then it's a little bit like bad dialogue written that's sort of medieval, you know.
Mm-hmm. Thou. Ye old.
Yeah. Ye old.
Yeah, horrible. Yeah.
My lord. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. It's, okay. Sorry, in that sense, it sounds more like a D&D prop. It's kind of like a, you know.
You know what's funny, Mark? There actually is like a fake runestone like that, where apparently at a LARP, this is true, there was a runestone to commemorate it. There was a LARP where they shot down a drone, and somebody took a spear and threw it, and you can actually, decided to commemorate this very funny LARP event, and you can see it, and it's like a really angry person with a spear and then like an evil drone with a sad face on it. Amazing. It's really incredible. Next question.
I want to be petty about the Kensington runestone because it's actually medieval. It was written according to the stone itself in the 1400s.
Yeah.
So no Viking was involved at any point.
No. Impossible.
Oh.
When was the Viking period over?
Depends on who you ask. I would say 1100s.
Yeah, at latest,
1200s.
And if you ask any home DNA testing kit, it's still going on. Turns out I'm Viking. Like, no, you're not. But actually, one little point on that. An awful lot of people get very excited when they see a percentage of Scandinavian something or other in the results. But actually, recent research has shown bigger movements of people in the preceding ages, so Bronze Age movements of people, and so on and so forth. And also, of course, people, as you say, traveled the world continuously after. And it's fascinating how all it takes is for someone to get... I saw a meme today, actually. It's like, American man, when he discovers he has 2% Scandinavian DNA, and he's basically got a beard, a horn, he's on like a mountain somewhere going, but it's interesting that people think that must mean Viking as opposed to, you know, just Scandinavian.
As we talked about when you and Howard were on our program, that doesn't mean anything. A Viking was somebody who very specifically went somewhere and did a specific thing. If you stayed home, you were not a Viking.
Yeah, but it also wasn't a genetic quarantine. It's not like you had a group of people who were like, you have one of those genes. You need to leave. Go away. But I don't want to leave Sweden. No, you have to go now. Okay. Sorry, I'm rambling.
I love the meatballs.
Yeah, exactly, meatballs.
Okay, so something else to infuriate both of you. How many Templars made it to the U.S.?
A lot, and they buried treasure in very deep pits.
Yeah, under a church at the edge of the old Dutch city of New York.
Don't forget the New Treasure Amsterdam. Island in Canada with money pit.
Yeah.
Where is that? I've never heard of this.
You haven't heard about...
Where's my treasure island?
Is it Oakmont? Something?
Oak Island.
Oak Island, yeah, yeah.
Have you missed Oak Island?
You haven't
heard of digging. Whoa. What myth is this?
The Oak Island mystery. It even has a show on the History Channel.
Yeah. Like it's second only to Hunting Hitler. Like it's it's a big show. It's long running.
I never heard this magical treasure island in Canada. Yeah, no one ever told me this.
Was according to legends discovered by some kids that decided to dig a very, very deep hole, I think 30 feet or something like that.
Okay.
Because they figure out that it would be treasure when they found it. And then the hole started to get sold to different treasure parties who has been searching, and people have been killed in there. And it's keep flooding. And
they've
been digging there for about 100 years or so.
Yeah.
As a show on History Channel. All kind of mystery. You don't
the
know.
The treasure is the stupidity we found along the way.
Yeah. Although in a very literal sense, actually, I guess if you sell a mine, you are selling a hole. Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, I guess it's a money pit because, you know, they have sunk a lot of money into it.
Hey. Nice. I'm going to give you an extra point for that. Yeah.
No. You take away points for fun. That's how we operate on this program.
Michelle, are you not familiar with your own history?
Apparently not. Apparently, I have never been told about the gold caves.
It's not a cave. It's just a pit.
But yeah. I'm just wondering where my money is at this point. I mean, you know, 41 years I have turned in this world, and no one has told me that there's a magic money pit that I can go and dive into.
Yeah.
And retrieve gold from.
But nobody has found gold.
No.
Well, they're not digging hard enough.
It's not true, is it, really?
This is what happens when we take the children out of the mines.
Yeah, see? this is true. But money has been found in the form of franchise rights and TV. So there is, you know, there's drama in them there pits. Got to film it.
Oh, that's great. Next question.
Yep.
Did the Vikings and their gods have spaceships?
Of course, and spy drones.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And heat-seeking missiles.
Oh, where did the heat-seeking missiles come from?
Odin's returning spear. Of course, it's Vikings trying to describe.
Oh, I see. It returns because he's so hot. It just comes back. I am the old father, the hottest man alive. The spear returns. Except that one time when I hit him in the face. He's like, oh, my eye.
I do appreciate Stargate's riff on this, though, and how they just thought that, you know, Thor was like the little green men.
Yeah.
And Asgard was the ship. And they just go, this totally makes sense. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that they kind of leaned into that nonsense and just went,
I seem to recall, I didn't watch a lot of that series because I don't think it was easily available. But I remember seeing an episode where they were in what looked like a sort of an alpine village almost. Mm-hmm. And it was meant to be a sort of a projection of an unbroken sort of Norse influence on a planet somewhere. And then I remember them going, we're going to go and meet Thor now. I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. And it's just that little gray thing with like big eyes. And I was like, mm-hmm. I'm very disappointed.
Where's the blonde hair? Where's the muscles?
I didn't have to have blonde hair, but you know, just have a face, you know, I mean, it was interesting.
It sounds interesting because usually they apply the Aryan aliens on that. So it's, I'm glad to hear that they didn't go that route because.
No, it's great. And they actually made them like they need help because they've been around a long time, but the Greys are having difficulty reproducing. They've copied themselves so much that they can't reproduce themselves anymore. And they actually have other intergalactic enemies called the Replicators that end up coming and swarming the ship.
Replicators could solve their issue. I mean,
well, the Replicators replicate themselves, not other things. But Stargate SG-1 was really good with that. They leaned into a lot of the conspiracy theories and made fun of them, but in a very creative way. So they had a whole conspiracy theory about the ancient Egyptians, mm-hmm. who took people the aliens took people and they put them on another planet, and then they built like a whole ancient Egyptian sort of thing. And that the aliens were really called the Goa'uld. So like Ra and Apophis and all these other gods were really parasitic symbiotes that lived inside people. Mm. And that continuously went into their supporters throughout time.
Yeah,
their whole take on things was very interesting. But yes, Thor was one of the Greys, and I really enjoyed that. Next question.
Both of those, interestingly though, add an interesting query, don't they? They imply that if you take a group of people from a certain time or place and you isolate them, so in the case of the Alpine village, or in the case of the Egyptians, that their culture will stagnate, that somehow it will just self-replicate, no pun intended.
Yeah, so will their language, where they can all just magically speak English from 500 years ago.
Yeah, well, yeah, but aside from that, so in terms of art, in terms of scientific development, it seems as though the idea is people, and maybe this is true, it probably is true, actually, that you need to have inputs from outside your bubble to be challenged and to grow and to develop, perhaps. It's an interesting sort of implication, I suppose, but it also actually implies that people are too unimaginative to change what they already have. Just intriguing.
They do run into civilizations that are, most of them are either dying out or they need help.
Right.
Their culture is stagnating or on the edge of dying.
Mm.
And so they do come to help the civilizations oftentimes.
Mm.
Whether sometimes they're fungi and they're strange balloon people and they have to help them anyway.
So I like the way you worded that. They have to help them anyway, despite them being disgusting fungi people.
They'll just replicate by themselves anyway.
Yeah.
Just get a hose and make a moist environment.
Yeah, get a wet log.
Exactly, yeah. They're great wars with the moss people.
Yeah.
Next question.
Okay.
Did Europe have any ancient pyramids?
Yes.
Yeah, Bosnia. Yeah. So in Bosnia, there's actually a whole national park for the Pyramid of the Sun set up. And is it, Osmanovic, I think is the guy.
Osmanovic.
Oh, yeah, it's ancient. It's like from 19,000 years ago or something like that. The only problem is there's no evidence of it. And whenever people go there, like geologists, they go, this is geology. And I like the way you're both simultaneously taking it. He's got this. Whenever they go, it's just geology. And also, though, interestingly enough, though, to this day, you do get people who've been there to the archaeological park and say that they've taken part in and seen archaeological excavation. And I wonder, presumably what they're seeing is people doing digging, not actually finding archaeology, but yeah, it's interesting. They're called flat irons, which for a long time I called them flatirons because I'd never heard that said out loud. And then one day I heard on, I think it was a National Geographic program talking about the flat irons in part of the US. And I went, oh, flat irons. Not flatirons. Yeah.
Yeah, but Semir Osmanagic have excavated a lot before. He had on his webpage picture from his excavations where we found a ancient road leading up, and what he have done is dug down so he hit bedrock.
Yeah.
And then just put the angles of the shaft a bit so it goes like a road, but he has no idea what he's doing, and part of his evidence is photos with a crystal camera that can only be interpreted by its inventor that photos the area of the hill.
Wow. Wow, and I thought geophysics was complicated. That's astonishing. So his background, I believe, was in oil prospection. He went and worked in Texas for a long time.
Yeah, he has had a I think it's a BA in economic of some sort. Then he got a PhD in social science about the crystal skull.
Okay.
And how the ancient Maya invented them. I have no idea how it...
So what institution did he pay for that one?
No, it was from a real Bosnian university, but I think it was kind of forced through, because if you read that PhD, I have no idea how he made through the final rounds. It's just, I mean, you can go and read it because I have a link to it on my website on the Bosnian Pyramid episode if you want to have a real headache.
And this wasn't written from a sort of a folk tales perspective. This was written as though it was an actual...
No. So it's like a archaeology paper, but written by someone who has no idea about archaeology, and for a social science or social...
Oh man, I could have gotten my PhD then.
Oh, yeah.
Social politics degree. And then he was he became a professor, but it was just for a paper mill or a diploma mill.
Okay.
So he often refer himself as a professor. And my favorite thing about him is that when people started to write him and complain about what he was doing and all that, he just add all these real archaeologists that wrote him and complaining as advisors on his website.
Listen, that's a genius move.
Yeah, so, hey,
what
advising
are we wasting
me?
Our time for?
Yeah. You get exposure. It's a win-win.
Genius move.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic.
But to answer your question more seriously, there are one ancient pyramid in Europe that still stands, and it's in Rome, and it's an actual burial. Then we have pyramidal structure in Hellinikon in Greece, but I don't think those were pyramids. I think they were just leaning inwards and then would go up as a tower, and they seem to be quite recent. I even visited those earlier this spring. Beautiful place, but it looks more like a construction that we use in farming, and there's other similar examples in, I think it's Croatia, with similar structure, and then it had a straight tower on top, but the sides were kind of leaning, had a slope on them.
And crucially, the Rome example is inspired by, of course, expeditions into North Africa. So in that sense, it's not a Roman pyramid. It's inspired by something else. Similar to, for example, near to me, Durham Cathedral, its architecture is inspired by people coming back from the Middle East, having seen mosques and going, oh, we could make that, and doing something similar. So,
no, it was aliens. They did it, Mark.
They did it. Yeah. I love the idea of an alien.
They also put the spaceman on the cathedral.
Yeah.
And the xenomorph.
The xenomorph in Glasgow, yeah. I love the idea of an alien going around with like either a salesman's coat or a suitcase, briefcase rather, and just turning up and going, take me to your leader. So you're taken to the leader, and just goes, right, have you considered pyramids? And then just go...
Slaps down the suitcase and the pyramid scheme pops up.
Yes, exactly. It's a pyramid scheme. Precisely. Yeah. Yeah.
That's another one.
Yeah. Opened up the briefcase. And before they know it, they signed up. So the emperor is just like, who are you? What's going on? He's going, right. So
just looking at the thing he signed, going, what's a timeshare?
He's like, right. So we're signed up to package B, right? Okay, yeah. And they have no time to back out of it. Before you know it, the Senate's having to, fund a pyramid. And the alien's like, yes, commission.
At the beginning of Saints Row 4, which is one of the best games ever, there's a whole sequence where Keith David is like the advisor to the president. You are the president, and Keith David is the advisor to you. He goes, okay, so which one, like the aliens are attacking, there is literally an alien ship coming and attacking people. And the aliens are coming to suck up Jane Austen. This is a real thing that happens. And, if you've never played this game is absolute genius. And so Keith David holds up two contracts and he goes, which one do you want to do first? Do you want to cure cancer or do you want to cure hunger? And that's like your first choice as president. And you go, oh no, man, fuck cancer. And then the aliens come and they stop you from curing cancer.
Wow. Okay.
And so that's really why we have cancer in the world, because, you know, 20 years ago, we stopped the aliens, or the aliens stopped us from making medical
advances. Yeah, if only.
Speaking of other infuriating things, is the Shroud of Turin real or fake?
In what sense do you mean real?
Well, Mel Gibson just decided to say that it was real.
Oh, come on.
And
Mel
also Gibson said that Phoenicians sailed to the Americas and that he don't believe in evolution or carbon dating or whatever he said. So,
yeah. It's real in the sense that it's an actual artifact that was made by an artisan.
It was in the Middle Ages.
In the Middle Ages. It was, I believe, commissioned by the church itself locally. There are letters discussing this. It's known at
the time.
There are
also letters discussing how it's a fake and how people are really upset that it's a fake.
Yeah, exactly. And people are starting to get a bit too attached to it. And I believe it was under the previous pope that the last statement was issued on the Turin Shroud. And what they said was, undoubtedly, it is central to many people's faith, or rather, it plays a great role in people's faith.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's a
so, but they don't go so far as to say it's not real. They've
so the only reason that people think that this is quote unquote real is so, just like Frederick said with our previous question, somebody faked evidence and they claimed that there was blood on the shroud. Yeah. There was no blood on the shroud. It was a paper that got pushed through by somebody who saw the shroud, I think it was in 1998.
They
had a vision that it was real and that there was blood on it. And apparently that was good enough for the people who pushed the paper through. And of course, that paper has since been retracted and it's not real. We know it isn't. And people have to understand that in the Middle Ages, people didn't think that this was real. In the Middle Ages, there were lots of pilgrimages to see lots of different relics and artifacts, and we know that these relics were not real. It was a representation. It was a Sunday out. People could go and see the finger in a cabinet, and then they could come home, and it was a nice excuse to have a good picnic, to have a nice day out.
Yeah, it was a tourist trap in a sense. You go there, you bought a medal to show that you was there, and then you went back.
That's pretty much it. It is, and no matter what. And the problem is, of course, conspiracy theorists will keep going back to this one paper in the 90s and going, oh, but no, you see, he said it was real. And they pushed the paper through, so it must be real. And now, of course, people are going, no, he's silencing him.
You have the Shroud Research Group, I think they call, that consists of real scientists, all of them religious, surprise, surprise. But they are still publishing paper trying to prove, and they actually get paper published and, you know, trying to get new dating techniques, and the only object they are testing them on is the Turin Shroud. And
it's such a shame, because in that sense, I know fine well that there are religious scientists in my friend group who are deeply skeptical people. In that sense, you don't have to be making up things just because you have a faith in something else. But it's also a real shame that. This comes actually back to the episode that we recorded on magic, doesn't it? This idea that somehow in the past there wasn't the complex cultural capacity for people to enjoy fiction in a deeply meaningful, complex way. You know,
In the past, people knew that magic was entertainment.
Yeah, magic is entertainment. Yeah, mystery plays as a representation and artifacts, icons even of faith, as something to inspire you, as opposed to something that's literally, in this instance, the shroud of that wraps the body. So it's an interesting example. But also, I don't know if this is on your list, Michelle, but this is something that I was mentioning to Frederick the other day. This is why I suspect that the Gunung Padang retracted paper is going to just echo on
for
a couple of decades at least, because
I actually wasn't going to mention that.
No, but because in that sense we've had, so I sent one link over to you, Frederick, but that now there's been two more since then, since that one. On the 27th of December there were three or four in the autumn last year, and obviously the paper was retracted back in March. And I think what I'm finding quite disappointing is the is the lack of literacy on the part of journalists to understand how important it is that it says this is retracted. It may still be readable.
I will just say this, Mark, that I don't think clicks. That I think that's by design, because they will automatically, it's to get clicks. They will automatically print an article based on a retracted paper, and then all the comments on the article will be, this is not true, this is retracted. But they do it purposely to get the rage bait going.
Yeah, and that's one explanation. But then we have to remember that most papers has gotten rid of their, science journalists, meaning that they don't have people that actually can read a scientific paper, because it's not like picking up a book. You have to train a bit to do it.
But the definition of the word retracted is universal.
That's a bit bad from the publisher sides in this, because they should just remove it off the internet. Of course, there can be PDFs floating in obscure places, but they should just put a retracted and then pull down the article and the abstract, basically, and just, this was not correct.
No.
Next question to infuriate. So were the four golden hats from the European Bronze Age just priestly antennas?
No, it's to communicate with the space overlord, Michelle.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Excuse me.
Yeah, well, I can't disagree.
You can't see, for people who are listening, but Mark's confusion is just really wonderful.
German golden cone hats.
Yeah. But in that sense, it was more just a case of the space overlords. I wonder which ones these are. Which particular space overlords are we talking about at this point? It's a fascinating thing, isn't it, as well, with hats. But that's a whole other story. But are they just conical? I'm not quite sure which ones you're referring to.
So these are Bronze Age, from the Bronze Age, and found in Germany. And there are speculations that they are part of a calendar, if I remember correctly. I actually saw one of them here in December when I was in Berlin and realized that the Pergamon Museum was closed for the next 30 years.
That was beautiful delivery. Thank you. I was like, oh no, it's Saturday. When's it going to be open? Well, 2050.
2065.
Yeah, and I realized that they closed it, I think it was in November, so I was like 2 weeks too late.
Oh, man. That sucks. But you got to see the hat.
Got to see the hat, at least.
Did you get to talk to the aliens?
No, I wasn't allowed to put it on. It was just a bunch of guards tackling me. And
but you did manage to lick it. That's what's important.
Not even that. Don't mess with the Germans.
No.
Next question. So, are mummies, vampires, and draugrs aliens?
Of course.
Where the hell are we getting this idea from?
This comes straight from Frederick's podcast.
This is amazing. I've heard lots of other interesting conversation around, particularly Draugr, but that they are aliens. So is it the idea that the alien consciousness is seeding itself into the recently deceased?
I'm a bit hazy on that because it's quite long ago, but there's something, the ancient aliens quickly ran out of ideas and tried to scramble to find content. So I think it's that they have this weird disease and, since they are immortal, it must be some sort of alien connection between them.
Oh, is it possible that, okay, interesting. Okay, yeah.
But here's another question for you, Mark. Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What archaeological evidence is there for giants, specifically the Lovelock giant, the San Diego giant, and the famous Cardiff giant?
There's real bodies.
Yeah, see,
I've seen the news clipping.
The Cardiff one, is that a real body? I don't know about that.
I have been the one good thing about having now actually finally taken an indefinite hiatus from having an ArchaeSuit Facebook presence is that I no longer have to sift through the feed of Photoshop skulls and I mean, the other day there was a toothbrush. This was AI actually, an AI toothbrush. It was meant to be the size of a basically, I don't know, a bus, because giants, and they can't even get the scale of these things the consistent. Because like sometimes the giants appear to be just big people. In other cases, they seem to be the size of the Colossus of Rhodes or something. It bothers me. But then what bothers me even more, this is a long-winded answer because I have no actual answer for you. What bothers me even more is that we're getting this now in the new Indiana Jones computer game, which is a fantastic game. I'm very much enjoying
it. It's so good.
But they're doing it. They're doing the Nephilim and they're doing something else at the end. I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't finished the game. That's a shame because it's one of the more, it's not as overtly colonially crap as Ancient Aliens and so on and so forth, but it's one of the most persistent pseudo-archaeological New Age myths. And it's strangely popular with people who are very much of faith, of a belief, and they need this to be real for some reason. They really and it confuses and upsets me basically because clearly you have people who are making, especially in the
is
early.
Is it any better than the Ark of the Covenant?
It is better. I think the Ark of the Covenant is better actually in terms of because at the very least there's a focused single object which has a connection to the storage of laws and Moses and all this kind of, you know, there's a reason for that, for this focus of an object, and that can, in that sense it could be construed as something similar to the Turin Shroud. You know, it's an icon of faith. It's a representation of a story. But with the giants, it's the fact that it's so inconsistent. But it's more to, you know, in the early 2000s, especially in the early 2010s, people were really ramping up their Photoshop skills, and you had these really upsetting, you know, little people next to giant skulls, like they don't want you to know the truth.
And, yeah, we all saw that crap.
Yeah, and it's such a...
I mean, they've been going on with this for ages, though. I mean, look at all the tabloids. You know, you see every tabloid, you know, alien baby is born to giant man. You know, that's the client. Everybody knows it's fake. It's just funny.
But I have a special place in my heart for those old school Photoshop pictures. It's just something.
Oh, so good. So good.
I mean, I do, but the problem is that the comments below are indistinguishable from comments you get still today. People just go really pushy. So for example, this is completely off topic, but someone commented the other day on a TikTok piece about the Joe Rogan wristwatches clip. So someone shows him pictures of, I think it's a Sumerian carvings with so-called wristwatches. And someone commented saying, but isn't it possible that, you know, don't get me wrong, she said, I don't believe that they're wristwatches, but isn't it possible that our leaders are trying to make us think that gems and quartz and diamonds don't have special time travel powers? so that we don't...
It's not at all where I thought you were going.
Yeah, I know. So that we don't investigate it, so that we remain powerless. And I didn't respond, but I really wanted to say no.
You know what? Sharon, you take your little rose quartz and you go up to a world leader and you magically bibbity bobbity boo them away. Yeah. I'll believe you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do it. Fine. But I think it's much more likely that people getting lost in those comment sections is precisely what lets people get away with not tackling climate change, not doing effective economic work, not actually, working for the benefit of humanity. It's
what do you mean? My giants and my research are for the benefit of humanity.
Yeah, you have to remember that the science often radicalizes you in a way. So I completely destroyed my social media accounts for this podcast, Digging Up Ancient Aliens, because I pressed the, you know, pseudoscience. I get more and more, and it gets darker and darker for every day that passes by. But I mean, for a normal person that clicks it, oh, this looks interesting, then they see it again and again, and kind of reinforces this idea that it must be true. And I mean, as I said, a special plot for place in the heart for the old school Photoshop, the AI. I'm not really, I hate those, but they even got lazier recently. So have you encountered Stargate Voyager, or Derek Olson, as he's also known? He published he published a lot of weird claims online, but recently he published a picture of a skeleton and said 15 real evidence for giants. And I reverse Googled that image. So it's from a Mirror article talking about an excavation in the Astrakhan region in Russia that mentions nothing about them being very tall.
So it's just a photo.
Yes,
this skeleton is far away, Dougal. No, no.
And then they kind of cropped it so it kind of looks big, but.
Wow. Wow. That is lazy. That is very
lazy. We're not going to talk about the Holy Grail, but I just want to mention it for a second, because all of these, and obviously all of these giants are fake, and but not all of them for specific reasons. But especially like the Cardiff Giant, which was just like a carnival hoax, and it's made out of stone. And when you look at it, you just go, oh, come on. Like, who would believe that this is real? This is ridiculous. He looks like a Pez candy. It's really terrible. But people, I've even heard people say things like, oh, but people who don't believe in conspiracy theories say, oh, but the Holy Grail was real. And I go, no, we know who invented it. It was never real. It was really, you know, it was part of the Christian cycle, and it's meant as a symbol of purity and faith, and it's unattainable. That is what the Grail means, that it's something that's completely unattainable. But people still believe that it's real, but just because it's so prevalent in media. And as well, when it comes to Enochian literature, which is what these giants of the Nephilim are from, people look at the Ark and they go, oh, but like the Ark of the Covenant, that might have been real. You know, we don't have any evidence for it, but it might have been. So why not the Nephilim? If we can find evidence for it, then no, it has to be. You know, and they think that like the Book of Enoch and the Book of Giants were taken out of canon because, oh, the government doesn't want you to know. They don't want you to know that there are really giants. You go, no, those were written way later. That's Greco-Roman time. People don't understand the timeline of when things biblically were written down.
So in that sense,
and they see books like this, and they just think, well, why isn't it part of canon? Why don't we know about this?
So in that sense, do you think then that actually there isn't, you know, is there a safe level in that sense? So if I was trying to make a distinction between the Ark and giants, or and even, for example, the Turin Shroud and giants, but is it possibly a case of, for example, maybe actually the Turin Shroud should be considered to be akin to the Ark, if not giants, because it's clearly an artifact of fiction. It's religious fiction, but it's still fiction.
Should we get into the whole, is all religious fiction just fiction?
Well,
it's a pretty deep discussion.
I don't want this comment section's going to be hard enough anyway. But you know, I think it's possible for people to have articles of faith.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Yeah, in like a personal way. But it's interesting. Yeah, I think I see why you hop from the giants then to the Ark, because in that sense, why are you letting one through, as it were, the gap and not the other?
So for example, if the Nephilim are mentioned in conjunction with Noah and the Ark, and if we don't have, I mean, there's obviously, you know, Dr. Irving Finkel, who's such a legend, has written the Ark before Noah, in which they talk about what the Ark might have looked like and how, based on the instructions, there's probably a giant coracle and that kind of thing. But again, we have no evidence of the Ark. No evidence of Noah's Ark, I should say. So is it really, at that point, is it really any different than the Ark of the Covenant? That's that. Let's make you angrier, Mark.
I'm always angry. That's my secret.
You're just going to Hulk out eventually. Are the obelisks an Illuminati conspiracy?
Which specific obelisks?
All of them.
Right. Okay. No.
No, because they're part of the ancient alien Egyptian power grid.
So we all know that
the pyramids generate
the hard drive?
Electricity, and then the obelisks are, you know, like pylons that makes it flow forward.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's it. Yeah. One interesting thing I know about the obelisk that ended up in London, the Cleopatra's Needle, is that they used as ballast for the ship mummies, cat mummies, and other remains of the dead, which when they got to London, they then used as fertilizer on fields. In and around the countryside, why do people work so hard to make these things make sense? Because the Illuminati, you think that they'd have better things to do, wouldn't you?
That organization lasted a handful of years, and that was it. They were done.
A couple of thousand years after the last obelisk.
That's what they want you to think.
Yes, exactly.
Obviously, that's what they want you to think, you know.
Yeah.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled. And just like that, he's gone.
Gone.
Yeah. I hadn't heard that one, obelisks. This is an education. Yeah, thank you.
Here's another one you probably haven't heard, Mark. Uh-huh. Is Newgrange aligned with the Orion star alignment?
No, it's not.
Yes. No. According to ancient alien theory.
It's like we're all trying to out-dry each other. There's like there's this moment where I go, what? Oh no, yeah.
I actually got someone commenting that it was proven that it was aligned with the Orion constellation.
Yeah.
And it's well known that all monuments in this area aligns with different stars and star signs. And then I asked what paper was this published in, and then he stopped responding.
Probably because he's still trying to find the paper. I mean, paywalls are horrible things. So
JSTOR, my friends, yeah, JSTOR, edudemia.edu. You can find all papers there for free, and all you have to do is make an account. There is no cost whatsoever. You can do it as well through your public library. They can do it for you. Absolutely.
That's cool. I know I have a legacy login as a alumnus from my uni, but I've never used it because, frankly, I forgot. And then now I'm just going, oh, yeah. All this time I've been going, papers. Need access. Okay. Thank you. Public service.
Next question. Just for you, Mark.
Yeah.
Why do archaeologists love bricks so much?
Because they're amazing. Bricks are bricks are wonderful things. Baked bricks, cooked bricks, ceramic bricks that exist, broadly speaking, further north than 40 degrees on our planet because it's too damp to have sun-baked bricks that don't collapse, are not only like Lego, they're not only sort of little things that you can build almost anything out of, but they're also wonderful little records of material usage, of building techniques, but also just of things like footprints. You know, you get cats and dogs and people, you get beautiful, there's an antifix tile from a Roman bathhouse in Prestatyn, where I'm from, that exists, because actually tiles and bricks and other ceramic building material is actually quite hardy. It's one of the best pieces of evidence that we have. And I feel like you've given me a little shop window here for one of my not so jokey, genuine loves.
I've given you hope, which I'm now going to crush.
Okay. Well, I'll just say I've got a small collection of bricks in the back garden. I can send you a photo if you want.
But I also enjoy good bricks, but in Sweden we don't really have brick building until the 1200s. Right, so it was our first building made out of brick was built just outside of Birka, the Viking settlement, by the Swedish royalty at the time. And I mean, Sweden isn't really the place for bricks. We have other cheaper materials. We haven't used it as much, but it was supposed to be a very fabulous building. And we even have found bricks with the marks of who made them. And he was very proud. So he signed it in both sides in runes. So we know that one who made these bricks was named Bove.
Nice. Nice. You see, bricks. Great.
Here's a question to crush your soul, Mark. So, okay. Why won't archaeologists just admit that the Earth is flat? I lift you up and I put you down.
because, to be fair, why would we? Like, and I mean that not only...
as in you won't admit it. Okay.
No, but not only... Well, actually, no. Okay, let's flip it on its head. Why wouldn't we? Okay, so in that sense, if the Earth was flat and we lived in a perfect Euclidean geometric projection, then actually it would be wonderful for strata. It'd be fantastic for doing an excavation because everything would be flat, and you wouldn't have confusing shapes. And gravity wouldn't mess up a site after the fact. You wouldn't have to figure out the processes going on once something is actually in the ground. Life would be much easier as an archaeologist if the world was flat. But it's not. And we know it's not for various reasons, which I understand. But I'm also not an astrophysicist who points this out stuff out a lot. Elsewhere.
Or just very simply, even the Greeks knew the world was round.
Well, that's the point, I mean, Aristarchus.
Yeah, the idea that the world was flat. People say, they knew the world was round.
But how did they know that, Michelle? Because of the aliens.
No, they knew it because of sticks in the ground and observing shadows. I know that was a joke, but one thing that I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn in the past couple of months, and there's a wonderful moment in that game where the protagonist is climbing up a hill to get somewhere, and someone in her ear is saying, "The world isn't flat, Aloy. This may surprise you." And she just goes, "Of course it's not flat." And she talks about how observing, I think it was shadows from the top of the ruin in the city. You could tell that there's a change, and I thought, people just thinking about it, just genuinely just mulling it over. I've always known.
No, this whole idea came from Washington Irving, and it was really just a new Catholic idea. It had nothing to do with any kind of ancient anything. Ancient people, as far back certainly as Greeks knew that there were, and even the very first map of the world that we have from Babylon is round. End of story.
And that's something that amazed me with the ancient alien people, that they might be anti-evolution, they might be anti-history, they might be racist, but they are not flat earthers.
Small victory.
Dude, you can call me a lot of things, but
that's dumb, guys. The alien told us they're around this Earth, and they're alien. They're flying above. That's how ancient people know the globe is round. How would they otherwise know? It's impossible to know if you don't have a spaceship.
I do wonder what happens when these guys share a conference.
Frederick, you gotta go, man. Yeah. You gotta go,
and just get the flat earthers to talk to the guys. The other guys who are talking about how are they aliens.
Oh, that would be a fun documentary idea. Take flat earthers to argue with ancient alien people.
Well, and I imagine you can probably track this stuff on a sort of a almost like a logic gate, where you know, they're together. Oh, no, no. The Earth is flat. No, the Earth isn't flat. And then they're together. And then, oh, aliens. Oh, no, brown people. Other than, like, you know, and then you'll just see this sort of this progression of it could be a beautiful diagram, you know. And then ironically, they all come back to one point after all of that when it just says against the main, you know, the mainstream is against us.
Yeah.
So it would all come back. It would like, it'd be like a bell curve. And at the other end of it, it'd be like, but the mainstream is against us, they all say in one voice.
And then where they will start fighting again about who is mainstream of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're mainstream, man. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You just have some random guy in the middle breaking up the fight going, bro, trust me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Next, we only have a couple questions left. So next question. Why is nobody mentioning the fact that an alien ship came to see Charlemagne?
I can't keep saying this, but but that's new. That's a new one on me.
Did I cover this, or have you started to improvise, Michelle?
I said this one you mentioned very briefly. Yeah,
Charlemagne.
Well, but all world leaders, they kind of want to assign alien connection with, because you can't be a powerful leader without alien interference. So you're ruling from the benevolence of the alien space lord. The same with Alexander the Great. He apparently had either UFO fighting for him and maybe even against him.
In this one specifically, in the Annals of Lorsch in Germany, it says that there were two shields burning with red color and moving above the church when Charlemagne got there. Yeah. So there are other medieval texts that recall other celestial phenomena around this same time.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing with, you know, the wood plaque from Germany. There are so many things where people will look at these old medieval depictions and they go, aha, you see aliens.
My favorite is the one from England with the aliens that climbs down from rope ladders.
Okay. That one I don't know about. That one's fun.
I don't remember the full story, but it's kind of like a sailor and he comes down and then he drowns in the air because he's not from...
Oh, that poor guy.
I think one of them is also about an anchor that gets stuck in a church because they kind of... They need to anchor the spaceship.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I suppose.
And second to last question. What happened to the aliens who fell from Magonia?
From what?
Magonia.
Is this too much? Have we entered a realm that's too much for Frederick?
I think Frederick's brain, a certain part of his brain just automatically wipes every time he
it's
gets
It's a trauma
too
response.
Deep.
Yeah.
Deep into the hole, and he just goes, "Oh God, I don't remember." This one is a 9th-century Latin manuscript. The Archbishop Agobard of Lyon complained about the French peasantry's insistent belief that a certain region called Magonia, whence ships came in the clouds, and apparently there were people who showed up and got off. And
Yeah, that's part of the legends I just mentioned, but I'm bad with names. It's horrible. Yeah,
it's likely that the Archbishop just made up this story because nobody else mentions it whatsoever. And it was people think of this one because it was the Brothers Grimm who latch onto the story and then repeat it.
Okay.
No, there's no evidence that this ever happened. And people think it might have been some kind of part of a Germanic or Frankish mythology, but there's no evidence it ever happened. Same thing with the airship of Paul McNoise. There's a very famous, actually, Howard and Frederick were talking about this, because as Howard said, I don't understand where people get this whole idea of Celtic and Viking peoples and airships. So there is a story about the airship of Paul McNoise that happened in the early medieval times. And that there was an airship that came, and again, people got off and said, "Oh, how do you do? How do you do? Let's have lunch." And then, that's it. But nothing else happened. And this is talked about. This event is actually talked about in a couple of sagas.
Okay.
Yeah, but flying boats are quite common idea. I mean, if you want to have people, I've always wanted to fly, and using a boat seems like a logical idea. I know that Canada has some lumber stories regarding flying birch canoes and lumbers to make a deal with the devil, and then he can go to Montreal and celebrate.
It's very hard to get the wings on the canoes this time of year. That's the magic word that makes the boats fly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you know, this is a slightly dark joke, but I saw the other day, with recent talk of US expansion, the idea of Canada becoming a state, which is laughable. People were workshopping names for the new country, and they were saying it should be the USA. Very good. No, not very good. No, okay. It's not funny.
You're not looking forward being the 51st state, Michelle?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we'd love to take over the U.S. and give them free healthcare. That's great. Yeah. We'd love to do that for them.
Yeah.
Especially with the horrible fires going on now. We would love, you know, Canada's already down there fighting the fires. So we would love to give them insurance. Yeah, absolutely.
Canadians and gay firefighters, apparently.
Are they one and the same? I'd love to see pictures of those. Fantastic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Love it. Last question. Did the aliens build Rome so that all roads lead to the same spaceship?
Come on. That's a saying, man. That's a saying.
Where did it come from?
I don't know where it comes from. I can't remember where it comes from, but it's a saying, and that's not a guiding principle of built of Rome wasn't built after the road network, rather. Do you know that implies that there were roads there and then the Romans founded Rome. That's not how it worked. That's not how it happened. And then the idea that therefore it's a drawing process to suck in humanity onto the mothership. Just principles of cause and effect. That's all we need in 2025. And I'm not sure we're going to get it.
And all roads go to...
The object that it's referring to?
Not the Colosseum.
Frederick, do you know?
I would say it goes to Colosseum because it's a great place to land your spaceship.
Oh, interesting. Okay, the circuit. Okay, I see that. Yeah. It's in reference to the Malarium Aureum, the stone.
But I mean, it's logical that the Romans would build roads that lead to Rome since it was the capital.
Yeah.
That's where the aliens are, obviously.
Yeah. I love you guys, but, but can we next time do a quiz that doesn't kill us?
This was it, Frederick's request. So on that, how did you do, Mark? What's the score?
I haven't actually, this isn't touched. I have a score of 7, which Frederick will be happy to know is not as high as his score, which is 7.5.
Oh.
So very well done, Frederick. Well done. And the 0.5 was just for a little bit of extra knowledge here and there. So very well done.
See, Frederick, now that you've won, what do you get?
Yeah.
I guess I don't have to leave the show to Mark, who otherwise would be your new host.
Oh, God. Just crying. I don't want to have to do this.
2 hours of Mark ugly crying in a microphone.
But I didn't know. I didn't mean to win the quiz. I'm so sorry. Wow. Well. I don't know. I mean, do we think that that the ideas are going to calm down as far as
no.
Okay. No. Okay.
As long as there is, it's something I've known in general. Something I've seen really in the last 20 years, especially now with horrific AI and all these kinds of things.
Mm.
People will believe what they want to believe, and the interest in the truth and in history. People are just not interested. We do this as well on my show, where we talk about actually historical events that people will say happened, which did not happen.
Hmm.
And it really is down to education and the education systems in everybody's individual country. Hmm. And unfortunately, there are certain countries that have unfortunate education systems. that are designed to keep people guessing, really. Yeah. And they just leave people to find out on their own. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
But I am actually working on Ancient Apocalypse at the moment, season 2. So I have new headaches going on here. But Michelle, Mark, great having you back. Happy that I didn't have to hand over the show to you, Mark. I think you're equally as happy. Remember, read the fine print in the contract next time.
Yeah. But, it's a predatory Frederick contract. Yeah.
But take care, and I hope to see you again sometime.
Bye-bye.
We'll see if we come back.
And again, a huge thank you to Michelle and Mark. I'm happy to walk out of this a victor, even if the, well, victory was slim. And make sure to check out Mark's and Michelle's content on other channels. I will link their stuff in the show notes to this podcast, so you can just go there and get even more history, archaeology, and a lot of different things over at their channels. And if you want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/diggingupancientaliens. Or if you want another option than Patreon, you can sign up at the members portal that you find over at diggingupancientaliens.com/support. Signing up gives you, well, ad-free episodes, you get early episodes, and you get extended episode. So this episode was a bit longer, but you who are listening in the public feed, well, you missed a bit of discussions in this episode. But if you become a, well, supporter, you get bonus content and extended episodes. Again, if you want to contact me, it can be done through most social media sites. And if you have comments, corrections, suggestions, or hankering to write that email in all caps, you find my contact info on the website. The show is created with the support of the Archaeology Podcast Network. You find a lot of other great shows like the CRM Podcast and, well, and my travel on their website. Producer of the show is Ashley Array, and I, Frederick Trusham, wrote most of the episodes, not this one, edited and mastered the episode you are listening to. Sandra Martelor created the intro music, and our outro is by the band called Trallskruv, who sings their song Foliehatt. Links to both of these artists can be found in the show notes. Until next time, keep shoveling that science. Men jag skyddar mig.